It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I have returned from Nashville in one piece, and I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to have this next guest on. Tim Ryan, a man in recovery foundation, going from dope to hope. Is that it, sort of?
From dope to hope, all helping right. One addict at a time.
And, you know, in Nashville, I find myself talking to a lot of people at the pool and stuff. And for some reason, when I say I'm the mother of two teenage boys, heroin always comes up. Mm-hmm. Talking mom to mom, we're all scared of it.
You need to be. I mean, it's everywhere. DuPage County last year had 39 overdose deaths.
Jeez.
My son's best friend and one of my dear friends, Adam Silvers, being the 39th. I think they ultimately had 43 confirmed. There's been almost 40 deaths this year, and 22 of them are fentanyl-related. The fentanyl is killing these kids left and right, which is 100 times more potent than pure heroin.
Tim, and it's mixed with the heroin?
Yep.
It is. We knew that heroin never totally went away. However, there was a period where it seemed like a drug of the past. It didn't seem to be something that we needed to be that concerned about. So what happened? Why all of a sudden did it come back to the forefront?
After Vietnam, the reason people's misconception is a person's got a needle in their arm, the homeless person, is they had to shoot it. The heroin was 15% pure. The heroin I can buy off the streets today is 50 to 75 to 80% pure. If it's caught with fentanyl, it's going to kill you, but it's easier for a kid today to get a bag of heroin or a prescription pain pill than it is a case of beer or a pack of cigarettes. It's everywhere. The cartels are flooding the streets. Marijuana will probably be legal in the next 5 years nationwide. So the cartels are growing the opium plants, yeah, the poppy plants, to produce heroin.
My general practitioner, my doctor, has two younger kids, and I went in for a physical. We were talking about things, and heroin comes up. It seems like it always comes up, unfortunately. And his theory, which I've heard from many people, is it starts with painkillers and opiates. And it's funny because our neighbors, we all have teenage kids, and we talk about locking up the liquor cabinet. But I think what's more important is to lock up the medicine cabinet.
You know, we just did a big event a couple weeks ago. Parents Matter and Kids Matter in Naperville, a big nonprofit, had a big campaign, Don't Be an Accidental Drug Dealer. And they had Linden Oaks, Banyan Treatment Center, my son Maxwell, my daughter Abby, Brad, Jessica, myself, Dr. Lott, a number of individuals. That's where it all starts. Kids are going into your cabinets, and if you had some extra Vicodin or Percocet from a surgery, they're taking those, sharing them with their friends, and getting hooked very, very quickly.
Which I am so guilty of. I had a knee replacement 10 years ago. I bet I still have the pills in my drawer.
Dispose of them.
I know. Got to.
Naperville, you can walk right into the police station. They have drop boxes. A number of the communities do. You know, Naperville was one of the newest towns to start the Connect for Life program, where heroin addicts can walk directly into the police station, say, I want help. We'll put them into treatment. The Braidwood Police Department, Dwight's on board. Danny Langlois, who we started the second program in the country in Dixon, was at the White House last Wednesday. His program has put 90 people into treatment in a year, and I think 53 of them are still clean and sober.
I saw a movie a couple of weeks ago, and there's a scene in the movie where these kids play a game called Medicine Cabinet Roulette. And what it is they have a party at somebody's house. They just go into the medicine cabinet. They don't know what the drugs are. They just take them at random.
Who
I say to myself,
that?
That's impossible, but it's not impossible.
It happens all the time, or it's called a Skittles party.
Yeah.
Where kids, Max, have you heard of any of this in Oswego?
Oh, yeah, I've definitely heard about it. Like kids will, they'll just go to each other's houses, and kids will just bring, maybe if there's different drug dealers, they'll bring whatever they have. They won't say what they have. If you can identify a pill, I mean, stay away from it. But, I mean, people, they'll just put them in a bowl. You'll just grab a handful. You'll just pop them.
And you know, it's even with
I am so naive. I'm sorry.
The kids today just think they're indestructible. It's not going to happen to me. I mean, 2 weeks ago Saturday, I attended my 90th memorial service since my son Nicholas passed away 22 months ago.
And so your son Nick died. How old was he?
Nick was 20 when he passed away.
And Max, you have lost a brother, and your father is a former addict. You've had a crazy life, haven't you?
I mean, yeah, I guess you can say that. I mean, it's not what hopefully what a standard upbringing would be, but I mean, I'm involved in this, and I mean, I'm trying to be part of the solution. And when you're raised around this stuff, you see what it does to people, and you get a firsthand experience of how it can affect families and how it really can break them apart. I mean, Adam Silvers is one of my best friends, of course, my brother. Growing up, my dad was a heroin addict the whole time, so I didn't know what he was like sober. So,
did you know he was a heroin addict?
No, not until he eventually got charged with another driving unrevoked and went to prison for it. But, I mean, growing up, we'd always have these Friday night movies, and he'd always be nodding out, and I just thought he was tired. I had no
from working hard all week.
Exactly. I have no idea that he was doped up, and so that's just who my dad was. I never knew him sober. He was always an addict.
What do you think hearing your son say that, Tim?
You know, it, truthfully, it tears me up. But, you know, Max now works for Banyan Treatment Center with us in Naperville. And on Father's Day, I woke up. Max moved in with my fiance and myself, and he had a note, and he had a bonsai tree. And he said, "Hey, Dad, if I could have got you a banyan tree, I could, but they don't grow in Illinois. So I got you a bonsai tree." And he said, "You know, you have helped shape me into the man I am today. And I'm blessed to call you my father." And I don't have the details, but I am so honored that my son is in my life. All my kids are, you know, I'm up at my parents' every weekend, just being able to talk with them. These are things I didn't do. Little Mackenzie, or my 10-and-a-half-month-old daughter, being able to raise a child sober. These were things I was not used to. I never did.
You were given a second chance, or a third, or a fourth, or which, how many?
You know, and what's real surreal, I now go into Sheridan Correctional Prison and speak tomorrow. I'm in there tomorrow, and I was in there last week speaking, and I'm on the hall. There's about 80 inmates, and there was a gentleman in there that I was in with 3 years ago. And I said, "Marquise, what are you doing back here?" And he said, "I was out 8 months. I caught another case." And as I'm speaking, I said, "You don't realize how instrumental you were into shaping me into the man I am today." I'm crying, he's crying, we're in a prison. Those are things I'll never forget, though. And that's what I'm trying to do, is just deal hope out here and offer guidance.
We're going to take a break, but I want to say your friend Marquise is back in there. You have to keep trying to get rid of this problem, don't you?
Absolutely.
One time may not work. 4 times may not work.
No, but, you know, I always used, relapse is part of the journey. BS. Relapse, you're either in recovery mode or you're in relapse. There's no middle ground. But changing isn't easy. I'm a creature of habit. That's why I kept doing, and I used it as a crutch and as an excuse. But that's where we try to guide and direct. And I don't care where people go to treatment, but once you get out of treatment, that's where you need to apply the tools to live in life clean and sober.
And just getting out of treatment, you have to do some kind of counseling, I would imagine.
Well, we're trying to get more people into it's detox, long-term treatment. Like with Banyan, we can keep someone in for up to 4 months. Mm-hmm. Then into a long-term sober living facility and learning the life skills. Don't let these kids come back home. Don't let them start earning their own way and having random drug tests and getting plugged in with people in recovery. We just did a bowl-a-thon Saturday night in Crystal Lake, and a few Brooktree and Banyan brought some of their clients there, and they have 150 people sober out here raising funds for a family that lost a child, so we can put a few more people into treatment. But you can have a great life clean and sober, but you got to work for it.
Tim Ryan here, A Man in Recovery Foundation. The website is amirf.org. Phone number to call if people need help?
Phone number is 844-611-4673, or you can call 877-722-0845.
More with Tim Ryan in just a little bit. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We are talking with Tim Ryan. What's your official title? What can I call you? A man who helps so many people?
A man in recovery.
That's it.
Great for recovering alcoholic and drug addict.
All right.
Title-wise, I'm Midwest Outreach Director for Banyan. I'm Executive Founder and Director of Man in Recovery Foundation.
Every time you're on the air, people like to call you a lifesaver, too.
You know, all I do is guide and direct, and I get that a lot, but I just guide and direct people and give them that nudge. And the reason I'm able to get through to so many people, man, I lived this for 30 years, you know, but I know when to pull in the clinicians to help or whatever we need to do to get someone into treatment. 90% of the people do not want to go to treatment, but once you get them in, 90% don't want to leave.
That's what I want to ask you. A parent that is recognizing symptoms and issues and basically knows that their kid is having an issue with drugs, if they put their kid in recovery, isn't the kid so mad at them?
Not at all. You know, you got to understand.
At the beginning?
Well, it depends on the age, and the kids are getting younger and younger. 14 years old,
what?
12 years old, 15 years old. You know, not just smoking a little weed here. They're doing pain pills. They're doing heroin. Xanax is a huge pill out there that a lot of people are abusing, and it kills you. But they need to have that talk, and they need to do something immediately. And they need to talk to their neighbors and their friends and drop the darn stigma. Your child has a progressive and chronic disease that's going to kill them. Why wouldn't you talk with people about that? Yeah. Oh, we don't want the neighbors knowing. It's ludicrous.
That's how I met you.
Right.
A friend of a friend had said, I talked about my kids having ADHD because it's, you know, not a bad thing, and I want to make it open and able to talk about it. And she said, I think my kid may have had ADHD, was not medicated because I chose not to, and is now medicating in other ways, and he's a heroin addict. And I'm like, really? I said, oh, I'm so sorry. But it was exciting for me to hear someone admit that and not try and brush it under the rug, because how do you get help when you're hiding it?
And that friend of yours is a dear friend of mine, and it's just a matter of talking, and they come to our support groups. Their kid's actually back in treatment again. But it's okay. There's hope out there, but people need to do it. Too many people are dying out there.
I want to ask Max a question. Max, of course, is Tim's son. Drugs tore your family apart. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat that. They tore your family apart. They took your brother's life. You attend parties. You see these drugs. What's the initial reaction when you see kids using these drugs at the parties?
I mean, initially, it's just I'm kind of dumbfounded by how little they know about what these drugs can do. Because, I mean, awareness is really the key. And when I see kids, they're just popping pills. Just like they have no idea what they're doing. They think Xanax won't destroy their life, or they think. I mean, they have no idea what's going on. So when I see this, it just blows me away how little they know.
And part of that, I mean, you know, I have younger kids that go to the Robert Crown Center, and they have a drug program, and they teach kids about drugs. You know, when we were growing up, it was like, don't drink alcohol, don't smoke cigarettes, don't smoke pot. Heroin was never mentioned. Really, cocaine wasn't mentioned that much either. Have these drug programs changed? Are they making kids? The DARE program doesn't help
that
much.
The DARE program was an utter failure. That's why, you know, we have the cop, the kid, the convict. Tim Ryan, motivational speaker. I take Derek. I take my kids. Detective Wostocki. A number of us go in and we provide solutions. This is real talk. So we'll speak to the students in the day. We'll do forums at night. But then for the families that need help, we're there to offer the help and guide and direct. Whether they need to go to an adolescent program at Rosecrans or Gateway or Linden Oaks or come to Banyan or Brooktree, it doesn't matter. But yeah, you need to talk about this. People need to be aware of what's going on. And there's a number of events coming up that people can attend. This Saturday, Chris's Walk in St. Charles at Mount Mary Sinai Park. Annapalooza in Geneva at Templar Park this Sunday. July 31st, the Nick Isaac Ryan Memorial Skateboard Event at the OG Skateboard Park in Oswego, Illinois. And we'll have a special guest appearance by Brandon Novak, who was dear friends with Bam Majera in the TV and movie series Jackass, former professional skateboarder and recovering heroin addict. He actually works for Banyan Treatment Center now out on the East Coast. We're doing a number of events together. He got the Streeter Overdose Walk on August 20th. Braidwood Police Department's doing a golf outing on the 5th of August to raise funds for our foundation. They want to start a drug turn-in program. Buddy's Purpose, August 27th in Centennial Park in La Salle, Peru. I'm in Canton, Illinois on August 28th. You know, things are just taking off. I spoke down in Springfield about 6 weeks ago to 55 rural hospitals. I've got more things planned. They don't know what to do in these small communities. They're getting these heroin addicts. The pills are awful, and they're locking the kids in jail. So we want to start some programs there to be able to guide and direct these people into treatment and get them on the right road and see what we can do moving forward with that.
Tim Ryan, a man in recovery foundation.org, AMIRF.org. Is that where people turn when, say, I know that there are parents listening right now that know their kid has a problem and maybe they don't have insurance. Maybe they don't even know where to start.
That's where we come in. You know, 300 people a month we probably assist getting into treatment. We have an office in Ringwood. We have one in Naperville. I've got 6 people that volunteer. A majority work with Banyan, but we do this just to help. No insurance, state insurance, good insurance, we can help you. But coming as of next year, you have to have at least state insurance to get into treatment. So they're changing things around. But yeah, we're the place to call and help. We run a number of support groups where the parents come with the addicts.
And that's crucial, isn't it, for
absolutely
a parent or a sibling even?
A lot of
with.
The Absolutely. A lot of the parents don't understand. Like Derek, I met Derek 2 years ago, and his mom attends our support group. Derek struggled a little bit, went through Banyan and a couple other treatment centers, and is back now working with us and driving me around and going to events and helping on interventions.
Derek, help me understand this because I don't. You know the price you can pay for drugs like this. So that first time or two when you were offered something, what made you decide when you knew it could possibly kill you, why would you still use these drugs? I don't get it.
See, when I was about 17 years old, I was already heavily, you know, smoking marijuana, drinking alcohol, messing with other drugs. But the thing about it is my inhibitions were already lowered. So the fact that somebody already offered me this next drug, I'm thinking in my head, well, why not?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't perceive it as such a dangerous thing for me to do.
Yeah.
Even though the stigma behind it, the thing about it is I didn't really care. You know what I mean? Because I have this disease that tells me that, oh, I'll be okay. You know what I mean? No matter what, I'm going to be all right.
It's not going to happen to me. The other people die. I can control it. And then Pandora's box is open. And thank God Derek's mom was all over this, kicked him out of the house at 3 a.m. in the middle of the winter. You're gone. Okay, I'll go to treatment.
Where'd you go? Where'd you go when you get kicked out? And wasn't that just a slap in your face like you never expected that?
It was, but you know what? That's actually the thing that I needed. Because for me, when I have a bed to sleep in, when I have a roof over my head, food in the fridge, I have no consequences to using. And since my mom kicked me out, you know, That was pretty much my bottom.
That broke her heart, I'm sure.
Absolutely. But you know what? That's what I needed, because she needed to be strong enough to tell me, look, you're not going to live under my roof, under your own conditions. It's my way or the highway.
You say that now, but how mad were you? How unforgiving? Like, how could you do this to me?
I was furious at the time. But you know, when I spent that night out of the house, it really hit me like, wow, this is what I keep doing to my family, and it's all on me. I have to stop looking at the outside sources, stop blaming other people, and finally take a good look at myself, put my hands up, and give up.
Yeah, everybody wants to blame. I needed to blame myself. I couldn't blame my parents, my ADD, my dyslexia. I'm the one that crossed that line, and I'm the one that's accountable for my recovery. Nobody else.
All right. Derek, how old are you?
22 years old.
How long have you been sober?
This time around, I have about 5 months clean in about 2 days.
Congratulations.
Good. Thank you.
Max, have you ever done drugs?
I mean, sure, I used to smoke pot when I was younger, but I mean, when you see what, to a certain degree, it's a gateway drug. I mean, my brother started out smoking pot, and I mean, things escalated. Now he's dead because of heroin. So when you see what it does, you got to put it down. You got to realize what's the right from wrong. Now I'm working with Banyan Treatment Center, and I couldn't be happier.
And you're 18?
18, yes.
Yeah,
sir.
Max does nothing now, and it's
good.
It's awesome. It's awesome. So another cool thing we have, I'm officially moving forward with my documentary series. We can't talk too much about it, but we'll definitely be on to give you guys some more information. And the whole premise is dropping the stigma, letting people know there's hope out there. And there is. There's a ton of hope. You know, we see it. It's like all the news. It's all negative.
Right.
We need the positive news network. And we're the positive people in recovery trying to offer hope out here.
You can't get help if you're not telling somebody about it.
Absolutely. And the parents have got to quit shame, guilt, remorse, drop it, pick up the phone, call, and ask for help.
People can get in touch with you. His name is Tim Ryan, A Man in Recovery, amaninrecoveryfoundation.org, AMIRF.org, and the phone number?
844-611-4673.
One day at a time.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
have a blessed
guys.
Day.
Thank you so much. We'll take a very quick break, and then Kim Gordon has the news for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.